And welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Joe Gang to the podcast. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks very much, James.
So, Joe, you are Vice President of Superior Gloves, located just outside Toronto, Ontario, for our fellow Canadians. And you recently wrote a book, Rethinking Hand Safety, Myths, Truths, and Proven Practices. Now, maintenance and reliability, there's all kinds of inherent risks, and hand safety, I think, is a critical but often overlooked aspect of that. Now, before we dive into your book and hand safety, can you tell us a bit about yourself and Superior Gloves?
Sure. Yeah, Superior Glove, we've been in business since 1910. My dad bought the company in 1961, and we started making gloves specifically for the local steel and automotive companies. And then just kind of grew from there. So we've been in business for over 100 years, and we just specialize in making really good work gloves specifically for industrial use.
All right, excellent. And you've been involved in the safety and the glove making business your entire life, then?
That's correct. Yeah, I kind of grew up in the business and cut my teeth, and my dad had me doing all the worst jobs as a kid. And then after university, I joined the business full time.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now, what we want to talk about is hand safety and, you know, the importance of it and all those things we need to be doing to prevent incidents. But what is the number one preventable incidents in industrial safety? Is it all related to hands or is it something else?
So the number one workplace injury is back injuries. So back is number one. But the thing with back injuries is pretty much everybody knows is you could be sitting at your desk and move the wrong way and you tweak your back. And sometimes there's not that much that could be done about it. Whereas hand injuries, we consider much more preventable, that if you're wearing the right glove or if you have the right guards in place, those injuries can be either dramatically reduced or completely eliminated.
All right, excellent. So the number one preventable incidents in industrial safety might not be the number one incident in numbers, but it's the most preventable.
That's what we would say, yes.
All right, excellent.
We have our biased opinion.
Now, why is hand safety so important? You know, let's start there. Why do we got to be concerned about it?
I think often the attitude in the workplace is that, well, you have a little injury, like a little cut, and it's no big deal. But the reality is that those injuries can be quite severe. Like they could be loss of finger, or they can lead to infection and time off work. And then they kind of add up over time as well. So those little hand injuries can make a big difference to productivity and to morale. And then those really severe injuries that could have been prevented, like loss of a finger or a hand, there can impact the rest of your life. And sometimes people don't really think about that if you get a really bad hand injury, then for the rest of your life, you need to ask somebody to button up your shirt and tie your shoes. And that can be, it's physically an awful thing to go through, but then also emotionally and mentally, it can be really debilitating.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know I can't count the number of people I've seen with hand and finger injuries from, you know, cuts to being pinched to even an individual losing a finger. They're prevalent. Thankfully, I don't think they're as prevalent as they were in the past, but it still does happen.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, especially the kind of old timers sort of view it as a badge of honor. You know, that they have the scars and that sort of thing. And we in the course of researching the book, we talked to one guy and like we noticed that his hands were quite scarred and so like what happened, and he kind of just all brushed it off and said, if I get a cut, I just put some crazy glue on there and get right back to work. And that was sort of the attitude of like, it's no big deal, or it's a badge of honor that I've had these cuts, but which is kind of a ridiculous attitude if you think about it logically. But thankfully that is in the, at least starting to change.
Yeah, absolutely. But I can remember my days as an electrician where I would cut my hand or something like that. I would just wrap it with electrical tape and go back to work. It was just the way it was.
I see that very often. Yeah.
So with that being said, what can companies do to protect workers' hands? What are the things they need to be doing to prevent these types of injuries?
So I think the first thing is that counter to what you may think is that they need to be committed to safety, and that kind of needs to start, or at least the CEO needs to be bought into it. So sometimes we see companies where they have a safety manager, but the safety manager doesn't have the support of the CEO or upper management, and then the safety initiatives fail. So definitely the first thing is getting upper management on board with safety and having them really actually committed to it, as opposed to just saying they are. And that might mean like looking at safety numbers at every, you know, quarterly meeting, that kind of thing, that needs to be a part of the culture and ingrained in it. And then the other sort of it is getting workers to buy into it as well. And so that the safety manager needs to kind of be in tune with what the workers are feeling and then looking out for their best interest, and then having everybody really involved in safety. And I think that is the foundation, and then you can build everything else from there.
All right. Excellent. Now, obviously with safety, there's a lot of different pieces that go together. There's PPE, there's policy, there's training, there's procedures, there's a cultural piece to it. So yeah. Let's start with the PPE portion. How important are gloves in protecting hands?
Yeah. So being a glove company, we would say they're very important, but that being said, that they're the last line of defense. So that, I mean, if you can completely, there's the hierarchy of safety control. So you can avoid getting somebody near something that's going to potentially hurt their hands. That's the better solution to kind of eliminate the hazard altogether, or to put guards in place, all that kind of those steps that you can follow. And putting gloves on somebody's hands is the last thing that you should be thinking. We had a really interesting story. Well, again, talking to our salespeople, and one of our sales guys in Quebec, he said he went to a pulp and paper mill, and he was talking to the safety manager, and they had just had a really bad cut. And what had happened is they had these, in a pulp and paper mill, they have what's called a doctor blade, which is a very heavy, large blade that's used for cutting rolls of paper. And every once in a while, those blades have to be removed from the machine and then sharpened. And so the guy that was doing that, he removed this heavy blade and then was carrying the blade across the plant floor to the maintenance shop. And then he slipped and then cut his belly. So he had to have 20 stitches on his belly. It was a very bad cut. And it could have been life-threatening. And then so the safety manager was right away said, to our sales guy, well, we got to get cut-resistant aprons. We have to get cut-resistant pants. We have to get these really high-end cut-resistant gloves in here for sure. And our sales guy said, well, first of all, what is he doing carrying the blade? Why don't you just build a wooden box, put it on a cart, and that will be much, much safer. And so the guy, lost $100,000 sale in these expensive gloves and that kind of thing. But that was kind of eye-opening, is that safety managers, just like everyone else, should be kind of thinking about that hierarchy of safety controls, about eliminating the hazard first. But I think it's kind of human nature to think always gloves or PPE as a first line of defense, and really it should be the last. So it's just a good reminder that sometimes we, even safety managers, forget that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they, in that hierarchy of safety, that PPE is, like you said, the last line of defense, but it does play an important role, because sometimes it is the best approach. Not always, but sometimes it is.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's always unforeseen things, and that's why, like, you can't engineer everything out. So that's where I think really PPE falls into place.
Yes, absolutely. Now, if we're relying on gloves, or we have gloves, what type of injuries do gloves prevent?
So the number one injury in workplace in general are cuts. So overwhelmingly, cuts is the biggest one. And because so many workplaces have things that are sharp, whether they're box cutters or people are dealing with sheet metal. So the number one injury is cuts for sure. Then the number two that we're actually seeing a lot better products for is knock, so impact on the back of the hand. So more and more gloves now are being designed with padding on the back of the hand. And it was kind of inspired by motocross gloves. But we're seeing that where that backhand knock, where like whether you're hitting the back of your hand with a hammer or a pipe, those injuries can be reduced, which I'm very thankful for because I'm quite clumsy with a hammer. And then punctures, chemicals, burns, vibrations, all those types of things, gloves can at least help minimize those injuries.
All right, excellent. Now, one of the things that I've heard of in the past is that, you know, gloves can pose an additional risk to other injuries.
Yes.
Does that occur? And what types of injuries could they expose us to?
It's mainly the main hazard is around circulating equipment. So whether it's like a lathe or a drill press. And so, this is a common thing that we run into. So if you're wearing gloves around that type of equipment, it does, no matter how well the glove fits, there's still an added risk that if that piece of material gets caught, you're more likely to get sucked into that machine. And that is, if that happens, those injuries tend to be like you're losing a hand or maybe sometimes they're fatal. So we've seen that at a local automotive plant in the last couple of years that a drill press caught a guy's hand and he lost a hand and then bled out and because it just ripped off his whole hand. So those are the type of injuries. Like we generally advocate if you're using a lathe or drill press or some kind of circulating equipment, you're better off not wearing gloves. And that's kind of counterintuitive because we like sometimes you're handling something that you could get cut with, but you'd rather have that minor cut than the loss of a hand, really. So it's unfortunately that's sometimes the best solution. There are gloves out there. We don't currently make any that they are advertised as tear away, so that the fingers pull off easily or that they come off quite easily. I personally wouldn't, if I was given the choice, I was a worker and I was working around a lathe, I wouldn't wear those gloves. But sometimes it's a necessary evil, and at least those gloves make the risk a little bit less.
All right. Excellent. So they do have those, but is it worth that trade-off? That's that, you know, that understanding that has to be there, whether or not we're actually going to experience greater risk wearing them or not, even if they're tearaways, do they tear off properly? Can we rely on them to tear off? There's lots of things around those that, you know, while they are designed to do that, they still might not work.
So, it was kind of interesting. I had been having this debate recently with a customer and they're an automotive parts manufacturer. And they were saying, we need a tearaway glove like this. And I was kind of like, got on my soapbox and said, you shouldn't be using gloves at all in that application. And they said, well, really, Joe, you don't understand. If we allow the guy on that machine not to wear gloves, nobody in the entire plant will be wearing gloves the next day. and so we realized that it's like a slight added risk. So they went with these tearaway gloves. That was kind of like really you're making a trade-off there. And that's kind of a hard decision to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Gloves, you mentioned being that last line of protection. What type of safety training should individuals get to prevent or reduce hand injuries? Is there hand injury specific training or is it more of a generic training? What are we trying to provide here?
From what our research is, it was really the best training is very specific to each application, so each plant and operation. So, and we saw that sometimes generic training would backfire. And so this wasn't really hand related, but it was a story at a chemical plant. So they had a trainer come in, and the trainer didn't do any kind of pre-work. They just sort of said, "Oh, this is how you should be doing your job." And so one of the jobs was lifting these bags of chemicals and putting them into a vat. So this bag of powder. And the trainer said, okay, when you're lifting the bag, you should be lifting it close to your body and lift with your knees, not with your back, that kind of thing. And someone spoke up pretty early on in the training and said, well, obviously you haven't been out on the plant floor or understand this job at all because the bags are full of caustic material. If we hold it close to our body, we're going to get chemical burns. So we always hold it out, even though it's not the most ergonomic. And then the person said that at that moment, that trainer kind of lost all credibility because everybody in the room realized, okay, they don't really understand our job. And so everything else that trainer said after that point was automatically discounted by those workers. So the best training is going to be somebody that kind of walks the floor and talks to people in advance, and then probably after that, then the training would be an interaction and kind of a conversation. So kind of adult learners tend to learn better when it's a there's a back and forth dialogue rather than okay, here, watch this kind of PowerPoint sort of thing. So that would be our first recommendation from what we've seen. Then the other kind of just really different recommendation, some plants successfully employ mindfulness training. So there was actually New Brunswick Power that did this mindfulness program with their employees. Essentially, what they found is the injuries that they were seeing at their facilities were tended to be when there was a lapse in attention. So kind of near the end of the day or right before a long weekend, that kind of thing, they saw a spike in injuries. And then so they did this mindfulness training, essentially just helping people to pay attention and to stay in the moment. And it, that really worked for them. It was a dramatic drop in injury. So that was something that we found very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I've heard of other organizations providing mindfulness training or mindfulness apps to a variety of people, but I didn't realize it would have an impact on safety. So that's definitely an interesting outcome that I never would have thought of.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't done mindfulness myself, but it'd be fascinating to go through that just to see how your focus could improve.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we have PPE, we have training. What are some of the cultural issues at play that we're going to encounter that could cause or reduce hand injuries?
Yeah, that's a great question. That was a huge impact that, we found when we did our interviews. Is so there's kind of two really important things happening here. Is one, if someone doesn't speak English that well, then that's a big problem because they're not able to read maybe the safety signs. They're not getting the message from the safety talk. And if an employer doesn't cater to that and kind of understand that, then those people that don't speak English as a first language are going to be less safe than those that do. And we had a frustrating experience with one company that we dealt with, and they had a large population of Filipino workers. Like almost probably most of their workers were Filipino, and none of the safety signs, all the safety signs were in English. The safety training was in English, and we asked them, like, why don't you have it in their native language? And they said, well, it's an English first company. These people need to learn how to speak English. And that's kind of well and good, but those people that day that didn't speak English that well were not very safe relative to everybody else. So that can be just sort of that attitude of you need to learn English can be kind of frustrating when it comes to safety in particular. And then that is compounded because a lot of cultures like Latin culture and a lot of Asian cultures and probably most cultures outside of North America really are not as prone to speak up as Canadians or Americans. So that if there's a problem, they are, a lot of cultures are just more likely to nod their head, say yes, even though they have no idea whatsoever what you're talking about. And then even compounded to that too, is we saw sometimes that, say for if you know, in the US, if it was somebody from Mexico and they're working and they got injured, they wouldn't even let the safety manager know or their boss know that they had an injury. They would just suck it up. So we had one safety manager was telling us about a construction site that he was managing. And there was one guy, and he was originally from Mexico, and he was moving particularly slow that day. And the safety manager was kind of like giving him a hard time, not in a mean way, but just like, hey, you're having a slow day kind of thing. And then he found out at the end of the day that actually he'd gotten a nail through his foot. And that's why he was moving slowly, but he didn't say a word. You know, he just kind of slugged through it, which is terrible because, one, they're not getting the first aid treatment that they need to recover properly. And then two, you're not knowing about the injuries that happened to prevent them again in the future. So that it's really, really can be very challenging.
During these uncertain times, Iridicio is here to provide support. We have set up a special page for you to access exclusive resources such as webinars, templates, and office hours where you can ask our staff any questions that you may have. We are focusing these practical resources to help maintenance and reliability practitioners that are working from home or can carve out a little bit of time during this COVID crisis to pick a project and implement best practices. Find out more at help.iridicio.com.
understanding the mixture of cultures within your workplace, but also the workplace culture itself. Is it one that in the past, you know, people have been penalized for reporting injuries or stuff of that nature? You got to be aware of those. Using different languages on all your safety placards and signs, you know, a lot of different things we can do here to help move that safety culture forward. So in your experience and in your research, what have organizations done to reduce hand injuries? Is it the combination of all three of these things? Did they focus in one area more than another? What have they done?
Yeah, this could be like a long answer. That could be like a lot of little tactical things here. I think the first thing, and what we've known for a long time, is the hierarchy of safety controls. So kind of start with that and eliminate those hazards, put the guards up in place, put the signs in place, do the training, and then provide the PPE. So kind of follow those steps and start with that. Then the next thing is that, and this process has gotten a bit of a bad rap, but it's called behavior-based safety. So, but it's been highly effective in organizations that have implemented it well. So I'll tell you about it, and then I'll tell you why I got a bad rap. So the process is basically, once you've gone through that hierarchy of safety controls, then you look at the everyday behaviors or the kind of injuries that are still happening. So an example would be one organization that we talked to is they were getting cuts on their hands, and it was because people were leaving box cutters open on this table where they had to do work with a box cutter. And then so the way that they implemented behavior-based safety for this particular problem is they just said, okay, obviously this is a problem. So what we're going to do is we're going to assign one person from the shift. So just at one point during the day for 5 minutes, they're going to get a clipboard and they're going to record how many box cutters are left open on the table. And then, so the first week they would say, okay, I did my observation and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, there was like an average of 5 box cutters left over on the table. And what you would never do is you would never say, Jim left is open. You wouldn't point blame at anybody, but you just put on a chart and say each day, this is how many box cutters were left open. And then maybe you'd have a little meeting. Okay, what can we do to prevent this? What can we do to eliminate that? And then you do the observations the next week. And the organizations that did that and kind of implemented it across all the areas where they're seeing injuries, it's very effective for changing those behaviors. And they saw a dramatic reduction in hand injuries, or it works for injuries in general. It doesn't have to be just hands. So, but where that's gotten a bad rap is that some companies have said, okay, we don't need to put the guards in place. We're just going to focus on worker behavior because workers are the problem. And so if they had that attitude, then workers kind of got their backup. But if it's done, all the other investments are made up front, and it's done with employees rather than at employees, then it tends to work very well. I guess like kind of like anything, if you do something at somebody and not get them involved, it's not going to go that well. So behavior-based safety would be number two. Another thing that we saw, this was really fascinating. There was a professor at University of Colorado, Matt Hollowell, and he worked with ConocoPhillips to reduce their injuries. And what they found through a study was that what is most likely to change people's behavior is suffering an injury or witnessing an injury. Those two things were the most likely to make you change your behavior. So what they did is they went through all the injuries that they're having, and then they reenacted them in a very realistic way. So they looked at their hand injuries, and then they mocked up this really, it was fascinating how they did this, but it was a very real model of the hand. And then they did a training where they reenacted that injury, and you saw the hand injury happening. And it was really grotesque how they done it. It was even looked more real than like a horror movie or something like that. So you kind of winced as you saw this. And then another one that wasn't related to hands that they had was, they had people getting buried in trenches as they were digging these trenches for laying pipe or something like that. And sometimes those trenches would collapse and you get buried. And what they did is they found these pressure vests that were essentially like a blood pressure cuff, but it would go over your whole chest. And then they would increase the pressure to simulate, okay, you're buried under a foot of dirt. Now you're buried under 5 feet of dirt. And it was like a kind of a terrifying experience for those people that lived through it. But it really changed their behavior, and that their hand injuries dropped dramatically and overall injuries dropped. So that was very effective. In addition to that, then I would say putting signs in place and kind of rotating those signs, that has been found to be very effective. There's a lot that can be done around positive peer pressure. Do you want me to give a quick example of that?
Absolutely.
We worked with a company, and what they had done is they created this hand safety campaign and all these things that you can do to be safer. But then the thing that they did that was really interesting at the end is they said, are you committed to hand safety for yourself and for your coworkers? And if you are, they had buckets of paint, and you would dip your hand in that whatever color bucket of paint, pink or blue or yellow, and then you plaster your hand on this board, and then you sign your name once the paint had dried. And then so what that essentially did was you're committing, and then everyone could see that you're committed. So there's kind of this social contract of like, okay, I saw that you're committed to hand safety, and I saw that Bill and Jane are committed to hand safety, you know, so that then it kind of reinforced that safety culture. And then I think the last thing that it's a pretty easy one is just making PPE easily accessible. So whenever companies make their employees jump through hoops to get PPE, so whether it can be, okay, you have to go to the purchasing manager and hand in your old gloves, and then the purchasing manager maybe give you a hard time, maybe you should be wearing these gloves a little bit longer, like that, any kind of those little annoying barriers to get personal protective equipment reduces compliance, and those reduction in compliance leads to more injuries. So you just really want to make it easy, convenient. You don't want them to have to walk half a mile to get their PPE or anything really. So just to make things as easy as possible for people.
All right, excellent. So lots of different tactical things we can do, you know, rotating signs, making PPE accessible, to behavior-based safety, to providing that experience, like you mentioned. You know, lots of different things we can do. Now, what No, absolutely. That's what we want to hear, is those things that we can do to help drive safety and reduce these incidents. Now, what prompted you to write a book about hand safety?
What prompted us was just kind of an internal discussion. We were wondering how we could better help our customers. And we felt like we were the man with the hammer who sees every problem as a nail, but our hammer was gloves. So we always tried to, okay, we can fix every problem that a company's having with injuries with gloves. And then it was just a realization that no, that it's not enough, that there's all these behavioral and cultural things that apply. And I was just wondering, how do we dig deeper? And then we thought, okay, we're positioned really well because we're in all these companies all the time. We can talk to their safety managers. We can talk to safety experts. And so almost we have a research team with our sales team already in place. And so we figured, okay, we could probably crack this nut. And then it was the idea of like, okay, let's write a book about it, because that essentially will create the discipline for us to do the research and do the interviews to get good answers that we can then share with our customers.
All right. Excellent. Now, if you had to provide, you know, one or two quick things that you could tell organizations looking to reduce hand injuries, what would those one or two things be?
Yeah, that's a good one. If it's like one or two quick things, I mean, I think just the knowledge that hand injuries can be reduced. So that sometimes we have companies and they accept it almost as fate that, okay, in the workplace, you're going to get hand injuries. And really, that is false. That we see companies where they don't accept that as a given, and that they've been able to reduce dramatically or eliminate hand injuries. So just the knowledge that it's possible to get to zero hand injuries or next to zero hand injuries, that you shouldn't accept it as just everyday life in a workplace. That's not true. That if you follow these steps, that you can get there. And then whether that's training or following the higher give safety controls or really good gloves, doing all those things can get you very close to zero, if not zero. And then I think the other thing too is just the knowledge that it can be a lot of work, and at times you don't feel like you're making progress. So it's like those little things add up, like 1% little incremental changes, and that over time they compound, and then you really see big changes over a long period, but not over a short period. I don't know if I answered your question there, but it's a kind of sometimes you have to take a bigger view, I think.
Yep, absolutely. You got to have that strategy behind it. We can do a lot of tactical things and not make a big difference, but having that strategy or strategic approach will make a big difference in the long run. Yeah. Now, if you could point to one thing that would make the biggest difference in being successful with safety programs? What do you think that would be?
I think it's, again, that having upper management on board. So those companies where upper management is not on board, then those safety programs tend to fail because you're kind of like hacking at the leaves when they're not getting to the root of the issue. That over time, you need that long-term commitment and investment day in and day out to safety. Because then, like, the problem is that if people are half-hearted into safety, then when there's production pressure or something else comes up, then safety takes a back seat and everybody realizes that, and you're not going to have that long-term improvement. Then that was kind of an interesting question that we came across, is that if you have a CEO or upper management that's not really bought into safety, then what do? You just throw up your hands and give up? What a lot of people said there is you have to show the ROI of safety. And that is true, obviously. Like, a company's not going to spend an unlimited amount on safety, and they would want to see a return on that. But when we actually dug into those companies that had poor safety cultures that turned things around, what it often was is like a traumatic event that caused upper management or CEO to change their mind, and it didn't have anything to do with ROI. It was an emotional thing. So they had a really, really bad injury, and they had sort of a come to Jesus moment, like, we need to change. So so what we didn't see is ever, oh, safety has a good return on investment, we're going to be safe now. It was more, okay, that something emotional has happened, and then that caused a change regardless of the investment or the financial calculation. So what I guess in a short way of saying it is, like, CEOs are not really robots. They're not just human calculators, but there's emotion. So that if you're a safety manager and you're trying to make that change, that make sure you include emotion, include stories, make it personal, and then just a little steps at a time. And that can make a big difference too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think of some of the change management framework out there, Ad Cotter's model for change. They all talk about the burning need for change, the need to create awareness and desire to make these changes. So definitely some very good pieces there, things we need to do to get the emotion, the stories involved to help drive some of these decisions. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the podcast today?
I think it's, again, that knowledge that hand injuries are not a given, that they can be eliminated. And then also maybe just to add to that too, is that sometimes we spoke to safety managers and they kind of have the attitude of, well, that guy did something really dumb and you can't help that. But the better safety managers that we spoke to were the companies that had lower hand injuries. They didn't really accept that answer that, oh, that guy just did something really dumb. It was more like, well, why did that happen? And then if they dug into it and peeled back the layers of the onion, there was actually a reasonable answer for somebody doing something that was seemingly stupid. So maybe they were under production pressure, or maybe they hadn't gotten proper training, and they're only acting actually logically given their own circumstances. So it's just that, don't accept that hand injuries have to be part of everyday life, and then dig in when you see those accidents and try to figure out why a person acted that way.
Excellent. Now, Joe, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us about hand safety today. But before you go, where can people find out more about you, the books, Superior Gloves, all those great things?
You can go to superiorglove.com. We are, and we have a blog where we're always posting helpful safety information there. We have a website for the book called Rethinking Hand Safety, where you can download some free chapters, and there's some helpful tools there on how to reduce hand injuries. And that's pretty much it. And then if you have any questions, you can connect with me on LinkedIn.
All right. Excellent. I will make sure to put links to all these in the show notes. That way people can easily access them, easily get in touch with you or Superior Gloves. One last question before we go. What are your favorite resources for safety or, you know, creating changes or anything like that?
So as I mentioned that University of Colorado professor out there, they have a website, safetyfunction.com, and they have some pretty cool videos. Some of the books that we leaned on pretty heavily for our book was Thomas Krause's 7 Insights into Safety Leadership. And then in terms of change management, a lot of what we leaned on was the book Influence by Robert Cialdini. I think those were all kind of helpful resources.
All right, excellent. I will include those as well. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to have this conversation with us to create some awareness around hand safety and the things we can do to prevent hand injuries. Thank you once again.
Thanks so much, James. Appreciate it.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.